Hey, this is Chipix. You're listening to Center Ring.
Okay, so let's start.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Center Ring, aka TCR, aka your favorite esports podcast. If you are tuning to this live on Twitch, you will notice there's no open music, there's no sound effects, no production, and I know you have come to expect top-level quality and production from us, but the latest Windows update claimed victim to another USB port on my motherboard, and that marks two that I need to mess around with, so it's happened in the past. Yep, they just know we're coming for them. But if you're listening to this in the podcast form, you'll never know, because through the magic of post-production, I can input music and intros and all that fun stuff to where you'll never even know there was technical issues. But hey, the show must go on, and that's why we're here. This is episode 128. Coming to you live, pre-recorded from an undisclosed location. The date is October 29th. The time is 8:42 p.m. Central Standard Time. We are The Center Ring. Go check us out on Twitter at The Center Ring. Our website, tcr.gg, has all of our other social media and Discords on there. Good fun stuff that you can follow us and all that.
Updated YouTube.
Updated YouTube, yes. We have updated our YouTube, so now it actually has our actual streams on it. So if you ever wanted to see what our beautiful face is, and you can do that. I'm also editing our stream as I'm doing this live. We have a wonderful show for you today. It might even be the best episode ever. Not only do we have e-news at the end, like we always do, we have some rules to get to for the upcoming Call of Duty World League. The CWL announced their first rule set, always subject to change. In fact, it already has since their release just a couple days ago. We'll talk about things they got right, things they got wrong. Think more of things they got wrong, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that. It's not just us, it's the pros also. But to start the show, let me introduce the crew. We have Anuj. Hello, Anuj.
What's up, fellas? Now, hey, just a heads up, if you are watching this live, you also waited about an hour and 10 minutes for us to start today from our scheduled time, so we appreciate you hanging in there.
Nuh-uh. We were 15 minutes late.
It says on the thing, Monday, 7:30 p.m. on our little write-up there on our...
We'll have to update that.
No.
little editing required.
No. That's... Twitch goes off of Eastern time, then? Or maybe I thought they went off of Eastern time?
Yeah, so
that's
we're on
good
time.
Reminder. Good reminder. Yes. Let me say hi to Brett, and then that will bring me back to something I need to tell everyone. Hello, Brett.
You don't have to say hi. Hey.
All right.
Hey, how's it going,
good,
guys? All right.
So, show announcement. We are going to start streaming a lot more, and I say a lot more, a little bit more on Twitch. Not just the show, but just us playing games. We're always, every night, typically playing a game together, because we're the three best friends that anyone could have. And we're going to start streaming there. It's not necessarily always going to be esports. This Wednesday on Halloween, I'm going to stream Outlast, some spooky game. It's a scary game. So I was going to stream that on our Twitch, which is just twitch.tv/thecenterring. So I was going to stream that on Halloween night. If you're into it, come check it out. Come follow us. So we want to... The goal was, is like, we really enjoy our listeners and we always love interacting with them, and Twitch is kind of one of the easier ways to do that, or at least broadcasting it. So we wanted to start using that a little bit more often than just once a week. So the new schedule is always subject to change, but Monday we are going live around 8:30 p.m. Central, and then Wednesday, Thursday we'll be live playing some type of game at 9 o'clock Central. So that was the terms and conditions that my wife signed off on, and
it's
the household is happy. The household is happy.
Now you got to get her to play Outlast. I'll tune in for that.
No. We'll stick with what we have here.
No spooky games for your wife.
We don't want anyone getting in trouble.
You don't want your Twitch career to end before it even begins?
I don't need any of what she says on air. But let's get into today's show, shall we? Because we do have the Overwatch World Cup happening this weekend. And not only that, it's all of BlizzCon. But in this episode, we're really just going to talk about the World Cup. This is, the third World Cup they're doing it? The second one where it's really an actual World Cup that you should care about and not just YouTubers voted in by fans?
We
don't bring up the first Overwatch World Cup.
You don't recognize Tim Tatman as one of USA's top Overwatch talents?
Was he one of the USA guys? I don't even remember.
He was voted in. He may not have accepted it, though.
Who were the popular streamers back then that were...
That's the thing. It wasn't even like super popular streamers though. Like you would have like Team Mexico was like some YouTuber with like maybe 200 subscribers or something. Like it was, they were going deep in the player pool.
Into that 50,000 player pool that could be pro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was not a lot.
So, 2016 was Seagull, Stir, Tailspin, Adam, Gods, and Messer.
Okay, those are good players. I mean, some are retired, some are trying to make their way back into the Overwatch League, but that's a solid roster.
No, but there were other ones, though, that were not. Not even players that were considered... they were literally just like casual streamers that played it. But we're past that point because we do have the actual World Cup. It is at BlizzCon like it is every year in Anaheim, California, where the prize pool is... Well, actually, it's not even a prize pool. You just... As long as you have qualified up to this point, you're getting $16,000. Doesn't matter if you're first or last. You're going to walk away with that amount. So it is kind of like one of those rare tournaments where you are just kind of playing for bragging rights in esports. We don't really get that a whole lot. But... We do with the Overwatch World Cup. I know before we get to this point, a lot of fans were saying, like, why isn't Blizzard really focusing on it? You know, we just aren't seeing as much publicity for the qualifier stage or anything like that. And quite frankly, it's because the qualifier stage sucked.
Yeah, I mean, you had your... In every regional qualifier, you had two teams that you knew were just better than everybody else. And they probably didn't want to advertise that because you watch those games and it's like, okay, well, I'm not going to tune in for, to BlizzCon because it's not going to be a competition. When in fact it is, it's just the way they set up the regions kind of sucked. But Overwatch, it's still very regionally dominant in certain countries. I mean, you see this in every esport, right? In Counter-Strike, you see it. Overwatch, you see it. They're not an exception, but it's getting better. I feel like it was the regional matches were more watchable than they were last time.
All depends, right?
All depends.
You know more players this year than you did last year, at least.
Exactly, and the league helps. The Overwatch League helps that, so.
Now, what are some of the teams then, in your opinion, Brett, that we should keep an eye out for here?
I mean, if you're kind of looking, from bottom tier, to me, there's two teams that are just better than everybody else. And South Korea, go figure. they only have like world champs on their team and, just the best player pool in the world. I mean, their third team could probably compete against the USA team. And make it close. And then the second is the team I just mentioned, the USA squad that are playing UK. But if you kind of want to, we kind of want to start there at the bottom. You got Finland. Finland, you'll watch and you'll notice they're a team full of Overwatch pros. Most of them weren't really starting for their squads, but in World Cup terms, that's a solid squad. You're not going to really see much. I mean, they're carrying seven players. One player to kind of keep an eye on. You got Davin there. Davin, I believe he's in contenders. He's probably not going to see him a whole lot.
I'm interested in watching. If you're looking at just Finland for now, I'm interested in Linkser.
Yeah, and
I am not bought in on Linkser, dude.
Well, I mean, he's kind of hit or miss, and which kind of doesn't
hit or miss. Like that is the issue: is that he plays Widow, and he either hits or misses. And he, to me, and I noticed his last World Cup, the dude is not clutch when it comes to a Widow duel.
No, I mean, he has times when he shows out, but and you could actually say that about two of the players on their team in Taimu, in the Overwatch League last year. How he started off just cold as ice, mm-hmm. and then kind of picked it up there towards the end of the season when they needed him, you know, in stage four. So which is not really, I mean, there are roles in Overwatch where you could be a little shaky and still be fine, like support and tank role. I feel like you could have an off day and still do well, but where you need consistency is in your DPS. And those two guys, if you're just looking at last year in the Overwatch League, weren't the picture of consistency. But that being said, they're better than China, so I see them going on to the semis. Like I said, one player to look out for on maps like Blizzard World, Hollywood, is Davin. He's your lone Tracer player. You don't really see Linkser and Taimu playing her a whole lot, so...
Realistically, just looking at the quarterfinals, though, I mean, it's almost like a clear cut on who's going to make semis. You have United States versus UK. US is going to win that. South Korea versus Australia. You're going to see South Korea win, even though Australia played really well in the qualifiers. For every point you just made, though, like you don't even have to talk about South Korea and why they're a favorite.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at the roster, and I mean, you can make arguments where, you know, maybe there's some maybe someone got slighted. I feel like Fleta wasn't really the best Fleta that we've seen, you know, in towards the end of the season last year. But, you know, they're probably bringing him there for that versatility. I mean, there were times last year in the Overwatch League where Fleta literally played like five different DPS heroes in one map in Junkertown, I believe, was one of the maps that he did that in. And he dominated on all of them. I mean, he could switch on the fly. He's very versatile in that regard. So, you know, I see him starting there with Carpe being your, you know, hit scan badass there. But yeah, I mean, the roster really speaks for itself. I mean, I could talk about South Korea all night long and tell you why they're great, but, you know, everyone knows. It's just their head and shoulders above everyone else.
I think,
like, I think they're an easy pick for the finals.
So the quarters, though. Yeah, no, mm-hmm. I agree. It kind of sucks. I think this happened last year. Don't quote me on it, but I'm pretty sure it happened where USA and South... No, right? Last year, USA played South Korea in quarters.
Yeah, they did. It wasn't a finals match. You're right, Tim.
And now US is playing South Korea in semis.
And it's a shame.
It happened 2 years in a row now where you have these top teams and they're going to get eliminated early on just with the way it works. Because then on the bottom half of it, you have China and Finland. Finland's going to most likely get through that. And then the interesting one to me is France and Canada.
Yeah, I mean,
if you had to, that's the most likely one where it could go either way.
It's going to be the most entertaining match on multiple fronts. I mean, from a character standpoint, you got everyone's favorite. You got Overwatch's favorite son in XQC playing main tank for Canada. So that's worth tuning in all by itself, right? Just to see, like, you know, is he going to be calm? Is he going to
It's a reality show with the kid.
Yeah. It really, and it's gonna be his chance, though. We've given this guy a million chances, but honestly, this is his shot. This is a shot to show Blizzard, you know, the six new teams that he's worth picking up.
The most impressive thing about the World Cup so far is XQC hasn't been banned from it yet.
No, yeah.
Now he is on his final warning, though.
He is. Like, no. He is on his written warning.
As soon as he got signed onto the roster, Blizzard immediately were like, dude, one thing happens. Like, test us. Just test us. Like,
say something on stream again.
And right. Yeah, I mean, and And honestly, I want to kill the guy. I really do. Well, not kill him, but, you know, I want FBI knocking down my door. But I just want to root against him. But honestly, like, I watch him a lot, which is kind of painful sometimes. I do it for the show. You're welcome. But he plays with his Canadian teammates. Like, they genuinely, I believe, I don't know one person on that team that genuinely doesn't like him. And
do you know one person on the team that would say anything if they didn't?
True. No, but to be honest, you know, esports, especially these guys, because I would think that the average age in the Overwatch League is probably like, what, 20, 21, right? And young guys are typically more vocal when they don't like something or like somebody. And you're not hearing that right now. So I guess credit to him. But this is really his, this is his shot. This
the
is
Fuel
his final
were also
shot.
Really nice about him until he was off the team. And then they were like, then, he definitely had an issue. Like,
yeah, we tried to help
part
him.
Of the problem.
Yeah. I mean, they did everything they could to make him, you know, to accommodate, make him feel welcome. And he's just not a professional. He wasn't. Bottom line, he didn't treat it seriously. So that being said, you know, he's gonna be their main tank. He's gonna be their focal point. We'll see how he does, how he handles it.
From a non-gameplay standpoint. Oh, go ahead.
Well, go ahead. If we're still gonna stay on XQC, there's one other person that.
No. Go ahead. I was gonna move away from the games and talk about something else with the World Cup.
Yeah, and for those Fuel, Dallas Fuel, listeners, someone to look out for, Crimso. You're not going to know him. You probably maybe haven't even heard of him, but he is signed with Team Envy. So he's playing along, you know, with Tailspin, McGrady.
He's on their contender team.
Yeah, he's on their contender team. So yeah, definitely, you know, cool to see, you know, a Fuel / Envious player, Envy rather, player out there, you know, doing his thing. But yeah, that's Team Canada. I think that Team Canada is gonna move on. I mean, just from a talent standpoint, I think they're better than the team they're gonna be playing in France, which you'll recognize half their squad. They played in Overwatch League. Really good players,
except for Wins.
Nikot and Benbest. Yeah,
they are now though.
Yeah,
they play for Paris.
Oh well, yeah. I mean now, yeah. I mean with the 6-team expansion. You're going to see a lot of guys, one guy that we didn't mention on Team USA. Well, I guess we'll get to Team USA a little bit later. I'll save that. But you'll recognize guys like AKM and Unco of Dallas Fuel fame. Maybe not fame so much for AKM, more so maybe, what's the word I'm looking for? Being notoriously bad. Mm-hmm. They even did a funny video about it.
Make jokes about it, though.
Make jokes about it with his Gigi.
If they can laugh, we can all laugh.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's look at Team USA then, because
okay,
realistically, not the names that you would expect, right? Like, no Seagull. No. Seagull's done. He doesn't want to do it anymore.
And
the big one that's out there.
That's the big one. I mean,
that's
Captain America.
That's the only name.
Yeah, I mean it's a big name, right? It's Captain America. You know, Captain Overwatch, really. You know, everyone knows him. He's the most popular Overwatch streamer, / you know, former pro, whatever you want to call him. But this is USA's best foot, right? These aren't you know the players that you watch and just maybe outside of Sinatra that just light it up. But you're going to see some guys that you haven't seen before. Well, one guy that you haven't seen before in Zachary. He's 17, playing in contenders for Fusion University. He turns 18, unlike Sinatra, unfortunately, in year one of the Overwatch League, where he didn't turn 18 until halfway through the season. You'll get to see Zachary in full force playing for the Fusion next year, so someone to look at there. He's really a jack of all trades in this current meta where we really don't know how it's going to play. He's a nice little Swiss Army knife, if you will. But you know, it's a solid team. I mean, you got guys that went deep into the playoffs. Well, really one guy that we got to, you know, really get a chance to look at for the Valiant in space. Just a solid D.Va, Solid off tank. Doesn't do anything like spectacular, like a Poco, you know, lighting up the right. kill feed with like a Diva bomb or what have you. But he does what you need. He's solid. And really, you could say that about all these guys. I mean, they're just very solid players. I mean, like I said, outside of maybe Sinatra, there's really not anybody that's like MVP caliber on this squad. So, I mean, like I said, it's USA's best team from a chemistry standpoint because there's no one tricks.
No, but again, they're playing South Korea in semis. I think South Korea is going to win the whole World Cup.
That's about 99% of the Overwatch community's opinion, which can't root against them.
No. So they won last year. They won the year before that. It's just until someone beats South Korea, I guess you can't really count them out. But one
how does seeding work there? Why are USA and Korea on the same side?
Which is kind of odd because Korea, I think, didn't even give up a map in group stage. Maybe they gave up one map, but I don't think they did.
One up against Russia.
I think they did. Yeah,
or
they
not
did.
Russia,
they gave up one.
Whoever was in the group, they gave it one.
And the USA went undefeated in their group. you hilariously see Sinatra trolling XQC like every stream. He puts up like 5-0. Which is kind of funny. But yeah, I mean, they were the two best teams in group.
Nope, South Korea also went 5-0. Man, I could have sworn they dropped.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, they won 5-0. Okay. Yes, they dropped two maps.
Yeah.
In their group.
So,
That's what it was.
Yeah. So, yeah, like you said, Tim. I mean, it's really South Korea's tournament to lose.
We will see. One thing to also keep an eye with the World Cup is that this is the first time you kind of get to see the new observing team ever since they let go Alchemist and some of that crew. So we'll see what happens there, if it's even noticeable.
Yeah, apparently they have some things that are going to change for the better and make it more better the viewing experience. But we'll see.
We'll see.
They lost
the talent. That new thing now, though, where if you have that all access pass where, you know, you pay money for, I guess now they actually did it to where you get something out of it, to where you have, it's kind of like Go TV, right? Where you can go in and follow individual play, like you are your observer for the match. So maybe people can finally try to see how difficult it is to observe Overwatch.
Can they retroactively go back and, you know, like give the people that did it year one a chance to like still have it, because year one was a mess.
No, it was terrible.
That was a terrible...
We've even talked about it on the show, like, when Overwatch first came out, we were like, dude, I play Overwatch, like, all day, and I still don't know what the hell's going on. Like, this is rough. Mm-hmm. In other Overwatch news, real quick, and then we can get to the CWL first rule set. Blizzard, they haven't even officially announced it. This is still rumored, but the amount of chatter that is going on the internet leads me to believe that it's legit, right? Because if it weren't, I would assume Blizzard would have came out immediately and been like, no, not true. But it is rumored that they are going to be making, for lack of a better term, budget cut to the Contender League. Where it's pretty much the minor leagues for the Overwatch. Before, they had LAN tournaments for the playoffs and finals. They're no longer going to do that. It is a full online league, going down from the finals to the playoffs to regular season. Everything is online. Which, you know, say what you want.
I kind of understand,
right?
I understand that part of it for being online, just because the audience is going to be significantly smaller. You don't see that in most other esports anyway. So what they were doing was kind of above and beyond for a semi-pro league. I don't know if MDL does, they do a LAN finals
they
for MDL land. And Counter-Strike, but Counter-Strike's also been around for like 20 years. So there's a slight difference there, but most games, generally academy teams, you very rarely see them other than online. So at least that one kind of goes in line with what you see.
And the difference too is, like, I really feel like Blizzard has the best intentions, and if they're going to do something, they're not going to do it half-assed. So, like, when they do a LAN finals for even, like, a semi-pro team, they want to do it like it is the finals of a pro team. And then I think it's just your cost effectiveness, right? You are not making the same money. I mean, you can look at these viewerships for the Contender League teams, and they're only like maybe pushing 10,000 if it's a big team in there.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's averaging around 1,000, 2,000 viewers. And Blizzard kind of did that to themselves, though. You know, when you're looking at this, they're cutting out the LAN finals. Now only the winners get money. So there's no second, third, fourth place prize at all. You have to win if you want anything, which makes it difficult for orgs to justify keeping people around or even people playing professional. You know, you have to understand there are no little tournaments anymore for Overwatch. Blizzard said, nope, we are not going to do grassroots. There will be no third-party tournaments. We are the people who are going to run this. Uh-huh. This is the way you become a pro. You have the, you know, they kept saying road to pro, right?
Yeah.
This is how you become a professional Overwatch League. You start in the, what do they call it? Like the open, whatever they officially call it. And then you go to contenders, and then you have the chance of really being recruited at that point to a pro team. Contenders is you're kind of just there until there's a spot available for you. And with that, they got rid of all third-party tournaments. So now, if you're taking away prize money from the Contender League, where do these semi-pro guys have to get money?
Any salaries. You know, yeah, but salaries, right? But eventually, it's not going to become cost-effective. And you know what this hurts? Like, Overwatch are trying to break the mold when it comes to competitive, you know, esports, where they're trying to treat it more like traditional sports. And to me, this hurts because when you look at Overwatch and the talent pool, you're looking at, you know, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds. And it's hard for a 17 or 18-year-old to go to mom and say, hey, mom, dad, there's this semi-pro league, right? I don't want to do school anymore. I want to quit school. I want to go play there. The salary kind of sucks. And I only get paid if I win a tournament.
Win it all.
Yeah. So it hurts. It hurts. That especially because you're expanding the league, right? Six new teams, or six or eight new teams starting in season two of the Overwatch League. And so player pools are getting larger. And if you're cutting in that space, the product that we get when the Overwatch League, you know, gets going is not going to be as good as everyone hoped it would be. So I hope they rethink, you know, the contenders and treat it more like a minor league, like a traditional. I mean, if you're going to act like traditional sports and you're going to expand, then you need to treat your minor league system, your contenders system, like a traditional.
I'm a little bit on the flip side of that, just because when I look at league expansion being six teams, in my mind, that money is coming from somewhere, right? You have to put more resources into maintaining the league. You have six more teams to just coordinate in terms of... I mean, I feel like there's just a lot more money invested. The game is still so early in its lifespan. I'm sure a lot of these teams are still getting return on investment, right? It's not like they've recouped their $20 million from year one, $30 million, whatever they're paying for season two. So these teams are also going to look to cut back on budget and not going to be as willing to support an academy team and pay these guys 80-90K per person. And then when you want to correlate it to real sports, you look at minor league baseball, for example. Guys are making 30-35K. They have second jobs in the minor league system. You look at the NBA D-League that they have right now. Their salaries just went up to 100K or 125K after being around for like almost 10 years now. Prior to that, they were making like 40-50K salary on average. Yeah. And that's NBA money we're talking about, right? That's like a whole different level of what the leagues are willing to put in to support a semi-pro league. So this kind of falls in line with what I would expect. I think they hyped up contenders early on. Now they've pulled a lot of that player base out and they've gone into the actual league. And that's really going to be a true building league versus what it was last year, where there was a ton of pro potential in that league. A lot of those guys are now filtered into the big boy leagues here.
Yeah, but that being said, you know, if the pool or the price tag to get in the league raised, which is only going to attract like the bigger players, you know, people that can afford this. I still don't think paying these guys a minimum salary that makes them comfortable isn't going to hurt overall the bottom line. I mean, they're already paying what, $30-40 million to get into the league. I mean, what is it budgeting like another $500K for your contenders team, right?
But a lot when in terms of when you're supporting two teams now, like that $500K goes to, you know, not only are they investing in having to buy their spot, right? But then they're creating facilities. They're looking at travel. They're looking at team houses. Like, there's so much other money that's going into this outside of the initial investment money that I feel like every dime probably matters right now. I know there's so much hype behind the league, but you know, from
you're
a business
still in
sense,
that startup cost.
Yeah,
you know?
It's still like you're dumping money in
for
before
year,
you make it.
But they're still developing the league as it's going. I agree with Anuj when it's kind of like they overhyped it so much, and it's what you should, right? It's your first year doing it. You can't go into your first year thinking like with the slogan of like, "Hey, it's gonna get better," right? Like that, yeah. We've learned how that works in esports and just games in general. The gamer and esports community has no forgiveness for a rough start. So I think what you're seeing now is just that kind of correction with the Contenders League and Overwatch. Now, does it suck that you have to win to get any type of prize money? That's pretty rough. It's just not the world we know of esports, right? Where a winner takes all. But
and we don't know what
time,
they're also making salary wise either, right?
Right. But you got to, not all of these teams in the Contenders are tied to a Overwatch League team. You know, some of these are where those organizations who used to have a team are now playing and just thought, all right, we'll never be in the Overwatch League, but we would love to have a team that can develop players that can go to the Overwatch League. And that's where you're going to see those smaller orgs that just can't keep up with the cost. That's where you're going to see that issue happen.
And the smaller orgs are also getting pushed out a little bit, right? Because they reduce the overall region team count size was reduced. I know NA team count has increased, but overall, it's a reduction in teams, right? So you won't see a lot of these smaller teams having to pay salaries because they're probably not going to have a team in the academy. It's not financially feasible for them to do it if you don't have an Overwatch League team as well.
Right.
So maybe the Overwatch League needs to do a better job, because if you're going to treat the Contenders and promote it as a road to pro, and you have stories like this coming out where maybe teams are struggling, it's not a good look for your league, right? Like, it's not a good look. So maybe if they're going to promote it as road, then they need to promote the teams a little bit better, and then maybe supplement or do something to help the players. I don't know.
But how many people from Contenders this year, you know, y'all would know this most likely, how many team players from Contenders got a chance now to move up into Pro League,
well,
whether it's roster additions,
like,
plus the expansion, right? So, and I think their plan is probably to grow the cities over a period of time, right? I don't think they're just going to cut it off right now. 20. If people are willing to give you like $30 million a team, Blizzard's going to be like, join our league, you know. So
it is a global league. They need as many connecting dot cities as they can.
Like, I guess my point is, right now, if you're gonna reduce the team size and it looks like a negative, at least this is the time to do it, because they can be like, hey, look, it really is a road to pro. Like, 30 people from Contenders last year are now playing in the Overwatch Pro League, right?
And
so
that's an understatement, too. I think it's going to be more than 30.
But, you know, whatever the 30, 40, 50, whatever the number ends up being, it's just it's a good way to hedge your bet a little bit. If Contenders takes a little bit of a hit, but your selling point is, hey, it's still a path to pro, because look, 40 players from last year's Contenders leagues are now on our pro teams.
And look, I mean, look at the pro teams last year in the Overwatch League. I mean, there are playoff teams that if you looked at their roster at the end of the season, and these are playoff teams. If you looked at their roster at the end of the season and then compared that to what it was at the beginning of the season, you'd been like, what? You don't even have half of your roster from the beginning of the season on your playoff roster. What's going on? So, yeah, there's room.
Well, I mean, hell, team who won it pretty much cut their roster in half by the time the season was over.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't our local team also? Same thing with
Dallas Fuel. I mean, did a lot of shuffling around.
They did.
So, Like I said, I people are always going to look at this as like, ooh, budget cuts. But just because there's a budget cut doesn't mean there like was a doesn't mean there's financial woes, right? It doesn't mean they weren't making profit off of it. They just Blizzard's a smart company is what I guess my point. And just because they're doing a budget cut here doesn't mean that it's not wasn't profitable or they're just trying to abandon the idea. They're probably just trying to see for the longevity of it, how is this going to work out bigger picture?
Yeah. So, trying to make it financially feasible long term.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It just sucks. And I will say this, for and this goes for any game in esports, I think, you have to have the casual grassroots also playing. So I hope in the future Blizzard just kind of lightens their grip a little bit on third party tournaments, you know, just to have, you know, whether it just be like a school tournament here and there or age restriction tournaments, or hey, if you play in the Contenders League you cannot play in these tournaments, you know, almost make it like third tier tournaments, right? And then that way you can be noticed that way and then get signed to a Contenders League and then signed onto this. There just has to be some grassroots tied to it. I don't think Blizzard can do it all, right? You cannot have the whole atmosphere of Overwatch, the whole ecosystem under one roof. Just make it last forever. But because like people always try to compare it to Counter-Strike, and I'm like, anyone and their mother can run a Counter-Strike tournament. So
yeah, shots fired at Counter-Strike.
It's a lot easier. No, it's not even shot. I'm just saying it's apples and oranges, right?
Right.
Trying to compare how Counter-Strike has lasted 20 something years compared to Overwatch in its second pro year. It's like, dude, they're coming in at way different entry points.
It's not apples to apples.
No.
For sure on this. It's very different.
Way different, and Blizzard is handling it way different than Valve ever did when, like, I would love to see the first time Valve started getting involved with esports and Counter-Strike from, like, a serious standpoint. Like, to try and being like, we need to try to develop this as an esport or get involved with the competitive scene. I bet you Alchemist would know that.
It was in 1.0, you know, early 1.6.
I mean, it was early on, but
yeah,
still, it would just be interesting to see what was their approach going into it compared to Blizzard's approach going into Overwatch. But
Tim,
we'll see.
Can you handle Alchemist being on the show again? Can your blood pressure handle it?
He just needs to learn who's the boss, and you know, see what happens there. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with the World Cup. Mainly also going into Overwatch League and Contenders and see how all that plays out. Like I said, nothing's officially came down from Blizzard on any of this. At least last I checked was earlier this afternoon. It was still just all rumors from a couple different people and...
probably announced it after BlizzCon. I would assume they don't want to...
they don't want that.
Mix that in mid-BlizzCon. And
maybe it's at BlizzCon. Sense. Maybe like on the stage. And we are going to cut the budget. But we have a new hero.
Oh yeah, yeah, with a rail gun. Yeah,
that's and not a tank.
Net. Oh, I died a little bit on the inside when I saw that, but we'll see. We'll see. One thing though that is official is the first rule set for the upcoming CWL. They did announce what the pros are going to be playing on in Vegas coming up here in December. I want to say there were mixed feelings about this rule set, but I don't even think that's fair to say mixed feelings. I think about 90% of the people said this was complete garbage of a rule set for being the first one going into Black Ops 4.
I mean, there were definitely some questionable... And maybe we should just break down the rule set before we dive into...
Do you want to go kind of...
I could give a general like overview of it if that's what we want to do, and then we can kind of dive in.
The game modes are game
hardpoint
game modes with an M.
To get that traditional for the most part, what you see, you got hard mode, hardpoint, search and destroy, and then this year replacing capture the flag, we have the new control game mode. Control game mode, for those of you that don't know, I'm not going to explain what search and destroy and hardpoint are. If you're playing COD, you know. Control is a little bit.
Hard point is Crazy King of the Hill.
Yeah.
And Search and Destroy is Counter-Strike.
Yeah, easy enough,
there
right?
There you go.
Where Control is kind of a mix of Search and Destroy and Team Deathmatch in a way. Yeah. Control, you have two bomb sites, A and B site. Objective is to plant or control. I say bomb sites, they're actually control points. Your objective is either to defend the control point or obviously attack it. But to go along with it, each team also has a combined total of 25 lives. So you can win the match by either taking the control points or eliminating the other team's lives completely. So that's replacing Capture the Flag, which I like the game mode.
Me too.
Excited to see that one added in. Yeah. I know we've all got a chance to play it quite a bit. So, you know, thoughts on the game modes?
I go ahead, Tim.
I don't like Control. I have been a fan. I've always loved Capture the Flag in any game. I think it's an amazing. It is like playground rules. You know, you played Capture the Flag on the playground. I love seeing it. I love seeing it because you can have comebacks, right? I think of even in last year for World War II, you had some of the crazy games where it'd be like a team would be down by two or three caps, and then the other team would come back and get four and win the game. You had huge momentum swings there. I'm not a fan of Control, but I will say a disclaimer. Obviously, we have never played on pro settings, so I will hold off on that. I might not like Control because of all the crap that's flying around that can kill me before I even have a chance to move.
Yeah. So I'm a fan of the Control map because I feel like there's enough cat and mouse, mind games, in-game strategy that can be played like over putting more players at A because you think there's going to be an A hit initially, or having your kind of middle guy roam back and forth between A and B, and you know there's some fights going on there. I feel like there's enough strategy involved to make it interesting where it doesn't feel like just a team deathmatch. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to it.
To piggyback off of what Tim was talking about, when it comes to Capture the Flag, I love the game mode myself. We had a lot of fun with it in World War II and in previous iterations of COD. The reason, at least I feel in this particular game, that would be a really tough game mode to watch at a pro level is rotations. The speed of this game, if you haven't played it, the speed of this game is really, really fast. I mean, the movement is incredible. To get from one side of the map to the other is very quick, especially with players like Ruin who have their grappling hook and things of that sort. You can really cross across the map fairly quickly. So in a game mode like Capture the Flag, it would be so hard to get that flag from one point to the other because the way the spawn points are currently, before they hopefully adjust them at some point, the spawn points are terrible.
It's like the spawn rotates on a hair.
Like, I mean, it's milliseconds to get across. I feel like it's maybe 3 seconds you can cross from one side of the map to the other. And that makes it really tough for a game mode like Capture the Flag. I think there's a fear that that could get pretty ugly. They don't even have it in the game, I don't think, right?
No.
Do they have Capture the Flag?
No, I don't think they do, which was kind of confusing on why people were saying that they wanted it, but like they have.
And maybe it's in the individual ones. We haven't played it if it's there. So, but the speed of the game is totally different compared to like a World War II type game. So this will be an interesting change. Again, with CWL rule set, they're known to make changes, so if something comes across incredibly bad or there's a pure hatred for it, hopefully they listen and
well,
and
they've
do
already
what needs
added
to be done.
A map too.
Hacienda has been added as a
they added Hacienda
hard
to Hardpoint. So instantly already, like I said, this was just announced 3 days ago, and they've already added a pool based or a map in the pool based off of feedback. So they do listen. Like I said, I think I'm going to hold my thoughts on what if Control is going to work out just because I understand what I am playing in a game with 5 other random people against 6 other random people or whatever is it 5-on-5, I guess?
Yeah,
it's what I'm doing is going to be completely different on how the pros make it entertaining.
Exactly.
So, and even from that standpoint of even playing on a competitive playlist with a team and everything. So, Control could be a lot of fun. It's just, we'll see.
I think it's going to play slower. Like, Yeah. All the control maps that I've played, you know, and just my, you know,
people just go.
It's just go. Right. And in pro, I feel like it is going to be more like poke, you know, and
it's more long range gunfights. You generally don't have the dude running around with double SOGs, you know, getting all over the place.
If you're that guy, by the way,
we hate you. We actually do.
You're a terrible person.
I think it will allow too for a lot of executions, right? Which is something as an esports fan, I think everyone loves to see. Like, think about how exciting it is to see a site retake in Counter-Strike, right? Well, in Control, you're going to have that opportunity like 5 or 6 times in one game for a team to take over A, and then the other team trying to push it back to retake it, and then back and forth. I think it will be
pretty easy strategy. It's like, hey, throw a 9 bang, drop your shield, and go. Well, what else do you got to do?
And that leads us on to the actual game modes. I don't want to get into the maps for each game mode.
No, no. Just know that there are different maps for each game mode. It's not one like standard set of maps. The maps are different per game mode. Timers, obviously, you know, different
all the,
as well.
Yeah, all the little timers, there's suicide penalty, all that's there. You can look that up. I don't really care about that because I don't think any of that really is
the fun stuff. Let's go to specialist.
Yes.
And there's only one ban currently. The only ban right now is Nomad.
One I thought was going to happen.
It's a good one still, I think. But so, it's not the only. I think we all believe it shouldn't have been the only one.
No. So if you've played Call of Duty, or even if you watched it on stream, go watch Summit plays a lot of just random, you know, pug rooms and stuff. He doesn't always just play Blackout. He plays a lot of the normal multiplayer. You could watch some pros. They're starting to do pro scrims with the pro settings, but if you really wanted to get a feel for what the game is before any of the pro settings were in place, you got to find a streamer that plays it. And you could quickly see there are a handful of just, how do I put this nicely and family friendly?
Overpowered
abilities and what do they call them?
Specialists, like their special move. Yeah.
I always want to say heroes or champions, just out of MOBAs and whatever.
You're not
but
wrong.
They're specialists, and I think okay. So Nomad, his ability is a tripwire, and he calls in the dogs. I think I like that. This is my opinion. Anything that involves like an AI, a self-controlled AI to kill, should probably just be out. The dog, I think it's ridiculous. If you're looking at the kill reward, they kept the drones in there, the 2 or 3 fighter pilot drones that take 0 actual player ability, and they will just. I was watching.
They can zone out a whole area.
I was watching Clayster. I was watching E-United do a scrim the other day. And they seriously lost a hardpoint game because the drones pretty much flew and bunkered the entire team into this building, and they could not leave the building because the drones just had every door and window on lockdown. And like you could tell, they were like, what are we supposed to do here? We poke out to kill the drones, we get shot by the players, you go out to get the players, but then the drones will shoot you, and you can't do anything until they just time out, which is forever. If they even time out, I don't even know if they do.
They do. It's just like the specialist abilities, and I feel the what do they call them? Like special
kill streaks.
Kill streaks. They're like really overpowered in this game in general. Taking down whether it be a tactical helicopter, taking down the drones, taking down the shield that is dropped. From I forgot which character it is now, I'm drawing a blank, but they like have even the barbed wire, it's like an incredible amount of damage these things take to get down. I mean,
you're
talking about anything
shooting, it takes like 2 clips if you're the only one shooting at it.
And the problem is here is most pros don't play with the secondary weapon, they fully equipped out like a primary and run like scavenger or something to pick up ammo if they need it, or pick up a gun off of a, you know, somebody that they've killed. So when you start looking at some of these abilities that empty 2 or 3 of your clips to get down, you know, you're out of ammo pretty much at that point. And so surprised they didn't add more on there. I think the biggest one being Ajax, if you're going to keep Ajax and you're going to keep the nine bang, which you can't take away, like, you know, they could have taken away a specialist equipment piece, you know, maybe if they wanted to. But Ajax puts this shield down in the game, and picture it as a tactical shield. For those of you that don't know, like, it's just a straight up SWAT tactical shield that the player bunkers down behind, and it gives them an automatic pistol. And this thing is so overpowered, you can't shoot the player through it. You don't see any limbs to kind of hit, and he can control an area really easily.
If for anyone who's ever played Rainbow Six Siege, Montaigne, it's like him. It's a full body shield. So imagine a full body shield with a hole, like Danuj said, and you stick a machine gun pistol in that hole.
That you don't have to aim.
I mean, you know, I'm sure the spread on it's really bad, right? Like, you probably can't kill anything with the machine gun pistol. No.
Lies.
From distance.
You can light up a hallway from a mile away and just kill everyone with it as you get not a scratch on you. I really thought Ajax was... So I was curious if they were going to ban specialists at all, or if they were going to ban, like you said, kind of like maybe one ability versus their special ability.
They did both.
Yeah.
So and they banned the specialists in Nomad.
All around.
Yeah, and then the equipment side, only two equipment bans. The sensor dart, which makes sense because it's
if
like
you're not going to have UAV. You can't.
If you're not going to have UAV, like the sensor dart could just be too overpowered, and if used properly on a hard point map or something, that's just, you know, I get that. And then the TAC deploy. But the TAC deploy is restricted in hard point in search and destroy only. It's available in control, which I don't understand the logic too much there. I'm sure there's like huge reasoning. I feel like
because you can get to A or B super fast, like why
not just ban it in all three? Yeah. But whatever. So they banned the sensor dart and they've banned the tactical deploy. No other equipment has been banned. So that does mean the nine bang is in play. The nine bang is a flashbang in Counter-Strike, except nine of them at one time from all directions that also don't allow you to move if you've been hit by it. And so it is the most overpowered
ever.
Also,
oh my God,
tases you. It's like someone just threw the sun at you.
It's a stun grenade and a flashbang hitting you at the same time. And it's not one of those things where it's a line of sight. It can be anywhere in your vicinity and it gets you. And so a very overpowered piece of equipment that I think every team will be running in Ajax for sure. I think that'll cause them to eventually go look at that. But I think those were the key hits there from, you know, equipment and specialist standpoint.
Yeah. And I was telling Tim today, the pros should... they should take advantage of this and really cheese it. Just cheese it. No gentleman's agreements, none of that. You're setting the tone for future pro league events. So cheese it up, make it unwatchable, make them change it because
and that is something that the Call of Duty pros will use a lot, are gentleman agreements. Like in World War II, you had it to where it was the M1 Grand. I believe it was the M1 Grand. It wasn't officially banned, but it was a single shot rifle, and it was just really overpowered because it took two or three shots to kill people. And you know, if you recall, we talked about it on the show one time, Clayster used it in a tournament and dominated with it. They were losing, he switched to it, dominated, they won, and everyone was like, "Wow, like, dude, we like that's like a rule, like we just don't do that." And I think you're going to see the same thing with a lot of cases in this at the moment. Like Ajax, I don't think you're going to see Ajax used in Vegas. I would be shocked if I saw a pro use it just because they know, right? They know like this isn't cool. I don't feel like a badass with a shield and a machine gun pistol just destroying everyone as I sit in a corner. But I also agree with you guys. I don't agree with gentleman agreements. Like, sorry, dude. The league made the rules. You have an issue with the rules? Go talk to them about it. Because you know what? It's not like they didn't have time to talk to players, not only pros, but of fans or casuals, and be like, guys, from a competitive standpoint, what would you like to see? right? I think I would rather have seen them ban too much now and then later add it in, thinking, you know what, the gameplay was kind of boring. Maybe we should add Ajax back in and use a shield, you know? Maybe we should give the 9 bang now. But to start by taking it off, because it's like, if the casual people are bitching about it, like, chances are the pros are going to bitch about it even more.
Yeah, and you know, when you talk about equipment, like, obviously with Ajax, and with them banning the dogs, I'm a little surprised they didn't end up banning the Seeker Mine also. Because the Seeker Mine is also, it's OP.
I mean, leave that alone.
It is, like, if you're going to ban an automated AI controlled item, which the Seeker Mine is, just like the hunting dogs, the only difference is the dogs come and bite you in the ass, and this thing, you do have a slight chance of breaking out of it if you use it immediately, or if you also spec into something that allows you to get out of it quicker.
That thing has a mind of its own, though.
I mean, if it gets you and you don't see it coming, you're done. So I think that's one that'll also get looked at depending on how you see it used, how often it's used. Because again, even on a map like, you know, a hard point game mode, throw that Seeker Mine out at the right time and that can do.
I think the same thing
will be said about Firebreak and his reactor core. That is where, again, for those who might not play, but maybe you watch, that is where he like pretty much sets up a mini nuke, opens it up, and then anything, it's a giant AoE that hits through floors, walls, anything like that. And you really can't get away from it.
And you can't kill him. He becomes the Hulk.
And again, like, I'm just looking at this from a pro perspective, right? Yeah. Like, I feel, because I even do this playing casually, a lot of times you don't even use that in a sense of killing. You use it to zone out people.
Yeah, you clear out a room.
Yeah, like, okay, you know, we are 10 away from winning this hard point. I'm just going to sit by the door and use my reactor core for 5 seconds of those 10, and they won't be able to even get near us. And guess what? If they are around the corner, I'm going to see the little damage tick, and I could tell you guys, yep, they're around the corner. Now,
the bigger
issue is friendly fire.
Because it's layers, right? So you can get somebody on a second floor or a third floor, as long as they're within this little like circular radius of you. And that's infuriating with that.
And we've bitched about this in other leagues, like in Overwatch, where an ulti could be canceled out by just like an E ability, right?
Right.
Like, and it's same here. Like you have an E ability. It's not even an ultimate, right?
No, it's not.
He's got a flamethrower, right? As his ultimate.
Yeah.
It's not even an ultimate, and it can win you the game. Like you said, Tim, at the end, you just, you know, stay in a room,
zone them out,
open up that bad boy, and good luck getting to me, dude. Because
like I said, there is friendly fire, so that might, you know, you never have to worry about that in casual friendly fire, so your team can just run through that and kill everything with you. So
that'll be a big deal. And
maybe that will help.
I didn't see as much yelling about Firebreak, and you know what, you made a really good point there. That could be the reason I haven't seen too much hate towards,
because of the Firebreak fire.
Well, yeah, because that's a lot of damage very quick, and if you're zoning out the other team, you're also zoning your own team out except for you. So interesting to see how that plays out. They did have some weapon restrictions, not many. I think the weapon restrictions that are in place are actually pretty good. A couple of LMGs here with the Titan and the Hades. You have the VKM, and then you have both the shotguns, the MOG 12, which is the single shot shotgun, which with attachments can be highly overpowered, as we've all seen, and then the auto shotty being banned as well. There is a temporary ban in place for the rocket launchers, but that's only until they fix a damage reduction on them. Right now, the damage to UAVs or choppers and all that is the same damage you output to players, so really overpowered. So what they're doing is they're going to reduce the damage of rocket launchers to players, but they do want to keep them in game, they said, because of the ability to use it as a counter to equipment. And so they are going to keep it in for that reason, but it's a temporary restriction at the moment until they solve that. But from a weapon standpoint, I actually don't have any problems with it here.
I will say it does irk me a little bit that the fact that the whole reason we have to keep a rocket launcher equipped, which takes away from using a perk or an attachment, is so we can kill barbed wire. Like,
yeah,
that's pretty rough. Or you have to use it to kill a blast shield that also has, like,
an AoE
a sound
radius
barrier that, yeah, will just absolutely destroy you. So, but at least they are working on that. Some other restrictions as far as attachment goes. Some big ones here. High caliber, laser sight 2, rapid fire, steady grip. You know, you kind of see those banned in every Call of Duty, I feel like. There's always those. Optics, which is the fast look. Perks, though. One was Gung Ho, which
is one of my favorites.
I was going to say, I guess I've always been... I always use these rules to see, like, all right, how big of a bitch do I play? And then I see Gung Ho, and I'm like, damn it! Like, I like that one. I thought that was a really good one.
They keep the perks, though, pretty standard. They want you to run, like, just a quicker movement speed.
Yeah.
And then, like, the ability to see, like, you know, damaging items through walls and some of that stuff they keep in there, but... These are fairly common ones for them to take off. Now, steady grip, is that like the short grip where they have grip 1 and grip 2 that people use on the ICR?
I think
that's
so.
Different than steady grip, isn't it? In a steady grip, the other shoulder grip, there's two shoulder grips. There's a stock, and then I think there's like a... I don't think that's grip 1 and grip 2.
I'm surprised that they kept grip 2, to be honest. Like, there is
steady
no recoil.
Steady grip reduces recoil during hip fire.
Okay, yeah, so it is grip 1 and grip 2. So, yeah, so that's pretty interesting, because right now in the pro scene, watching just them doing their you know...
cash tournament things.
Yeah, cash tournaments that they do. The most used weapon right now is the ICR with grip 1 and grip 2. So now that they've taken that out, I'm really curious to see where people turn to. I think you'll see guns like the Maddox come into play, Rampart. There are a handful of other guns, but... I'm curious to see how that changes that, because you've seen a pretty consistent following of ICR, grip 1, grip 2, and then the third one can kind of be interchanged with whatever, which you can't even have now because there's no operator mod that you can add on, or primary mod, I should say. But those are fairly standard wild cards, overkill, primary and secondary mods not allowed.
What you would expect.
Score streaks, you have UAV is not allowed, which is always there. Care package, counter UAV, obviously unnecessary, and then Sentry, and thank God the Mantis. Tim, like you said, I agree with you.
I just had
that
flashbacks from the Mantis.
Oh my gosh, the Mantis is so deadly. I mean, it's incredible. It's just a walking little drone that kills everything. Again, I am surprised, like Tim mentioned earlier, that the drones are not taken out when you take out something like the Mantis.
How are those allowed in the Mantis? Like, it's to your point where it was like, their logic doesn't line up all the time here, right? Like, oh, okay, I see why you would ban this, but then you kept this? Like, why?
Now, the Mantis can be player operated. The drones cannot be player operated, right?
Right.
So maybe there's that thought process there, but again,
my counter to that is you can't play your character and the Mantis at the same time. So at least with the Mantis being player operated, you know there is one dude just sitting around, not actually trying to capture anything, right?
So you're just standing there.
With the drones it's just you hit it and leave it, right?
And then on the gear side, it's just the acoustic sensor. Sensor. So the armor they left in, because it is a big deal not to have STEM as your perk.
Is that why they didn't want it only being STEM?
Like, they didn't get rid of FMJ, which does more damage to armor. So they left FMJ in there. So if you are going to go armor, there is a counter to it. I think anything that has a counter should be allowed, right? If you can counter it, then you need to play smart, and it might not be the way you like to play, but hey, the game has a counter available to you. So armor, I think, has a huge drawback, is there is a counter to it, and you get rid of stim shot, and stim shot is so vital. I would be shocked if not everybody ran stim shot.
Now that you say this, though, I do kind of like this idea, and you know what, if there are any pros listening, you can use this strat. Just give TCR the credit.
Call it TCR.
the TCR strat. So you are correct. The stim pack is so valuable, you're going to start with that every game. So, meaning a lot of people probably aren't using Full Metal Jacket right off the start. You are on control, right? And you got to push a point so all your team switches to their armor setup class to push in, knowing that you're going to have the advantage because none of them have Full Metal Jacket on. You push it in for that first offensive push, and then you can get in with that extra bit of health.
And then switch over.
It adds a little bit more of a play style of like, all right, guys, we got to push in. We need that initial oomph, right? Got to be able to take that initial hit. So let's switch to this. None of them are using Full Metal Jacket. We can take advantage of this.
Yeah, I mean, the game is already like so vastly different than what people are, the normal person is playing. So at least some of these things are still in there. Obviously, the game is just going to look so different than what people are used to seeing, though, which is always the case with COD, you know, with the Pro League scene. But again, guys, these are all subject to changes. So if you don't like something right now, bear with it. A tournament or two goes by.
They do change. Like I said, my beef to that is, why are we waiting till the first official event for CWL to see if they need to make changes, right?
Yeah.
Like, we knew that, we all know that Ajax is going to be eventually taken out. So,
they did have a conversation with players. So, a lot of them voiced it on Twitter because a lot of them did get hit up saying, like, how do y'all not have a voice in this? And they said there was conversations back and forth. Now, obviously, they didn't listen to everything. But it does seem like they talked to their community more than a game like Counter-Strike, where we know they don't ask anybody anything. Very evident in things like the R8.
Are you sure, though? How do we know Simple didn't want the Negev to be cheaper?
Right? No, but you know what I'm saying. Like in Counter-Strike, they don't ask at all. I mean, they don't even talk to the top-tier pros. There was conversation in this case. Again, the fact that this is an ongoing rule set, it does suck for some of these first tournaments, and the fact that these games only have a 1-year lifespan, you want them to get it right from the start. But hopefully by the second tournament, you see, I think the biggest things is you ban Ajax, you ban Torque, and you ban Nomad. All three of those operators are out. I know that cuts away from, you know, 3 out of your 8 or 9 operators or whatever the total number is. But I think those two changes will drastically help people's at least thought process on this, along with the map pool. I think even that'll change a little bit, but I think Ajax and Torque being allowed were the two biggest shockers that everybody like took away from.
And I will say this, I don't want the map pool to change a whole lot, though. I know people were complaining, some people on Reddit were saying that there were too many maps, which in my opinion, that's never possible. You can never have too many maps to pick from. Like, let me introduce you to this game called Counter-Strike and a map called Cobblestone, you know,
it's the same amount as Counter-Strike in that sense. They're roughly running about 7 maps in the pro scene. They alter between 7 maps depending on the game mode. So the map pool, I think, is fine. I think you take Gridlock out. I think Gridlock is like the worst map in the game.
Which one's that? Is that the one with the bus?
It's the beta map
with the buses out.
The bus in the middle.
It's not a good map.
That map is just god awful. Don't understand the logic behind that map. So personally, I would like to see that one taken out. But yeah, again, I'm okay with the map pool. I prefer there to be 7-8 maps in play. It keeps variety there and no big issues with it. I don't think there's any other major changes other than
friendly fire being enabled. Yeah, friendly fire is huge, obviously. I will say this also, that they are coming out with its own playlist. So I mean, if you're like, oh, well, it doesn't matter, I won't ever get to play these game rules. No, they are coming out with a competitive game list where it is exactly what the pros are playing on. So I can tell you right now, that's what I will be playing on all the time.
Yep. League play will become available in December for everybody online. So you'll have league play rotation.
I really do want to get a TCR community night going. And I think it would be a lot of fun with Call of Duty, because we can just get so many games in at once.
Yeah.
Let's switch it up. You know, I think everyone's kind of the equal footing. And we'll argue on which team has to take Brett. So we can do that.
Come on, man. Anuj. Come on, step up for
me. We had a good game in control. There were moments where, in fact, in the play of the game, which I had the play of the game in that game, you see Brett save my ass mid-play of the game as a dude's coming around a corner, and all you see is the blood splatter on my screen because Brett put him down. So, Brett, I was appreciative of that.
Oh, yeah, I got your back, man. All right.
One thing that I will commend them for with Search and Destroy that we forgot to mention is the silent plant. So
yeah, how does that work?
So this was huge because the maps were so small that pretty much in Search and Destroy, you knew immediately where they were planting because the second they started, you could hear it from across the map and you could get there.
Yeah.
Now it's just the bomb just doesn't make a noise when getting planted.
Okay, so that's an automatic thing. It's not like you have to perk into something to do a silent plant. It's just always a silent plant?
Yeah, it's just it's
I like that. Here? Because the plant takes
silent plant enabled. That's a setting for Search and Destroy. Silent plant enabled.
Because isn't it like naturally like 3 or 4 seconds anyway
it's
already
longer,
to plant
it's
or
a
something?
Long plant.
So like we mentioned earlier, just getting across maps is so quick. If you're already halfway across and you hear that bomb plant, you can get there and stop that plant pretty quick from happening.
Yeah, you're 2 grapples away.
And they give you plenty of time to get a chance to defuse. So.
Yeah,
I'm okay with that being the case. Even in Counter-Strike, it's silent to an extent. It's like the first second and a half feels silent,
that's
and then it starts making that. Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm excited to see. Like I said, it's one of those things where you don't really know until you see pros play because they just think a different way, right? When you're constantly scrimming and playing with a full group of a team as one and call-outs and everything. The gameplay is completely different. I know a lot of people complain about the SMGs. Well, yeah, it's annoying when it's just 6 random dudes just playing around in a team deathmatch server, you know, holding down W and never looking back. But I think if we all decided to slow down and then you pull out your assault rifles and hit them from afar, then it probably isn't that big a deal. So we'll see what happens with Vegas. That will be the first tournament we get to see. I think that's what, December 7th, if I'm remembering correctly off the top of my head.
Ooh, that's the same day Smash Ultimate comes out. So, ooh, that's bad planning on their part.
AEW Vegas. Is it December? Got it, thanks.
It is December.
It's December.
It starts Christmas Day, I think.
Christmas
No,
Day.
December 12th. No, December 7th. December 8th. December 7th through the 9th. Well, I guess I'll have it on in the background as I'm playing Smash. So
yeah.
We'll get to watch it there. Let's get into some e-news, shall we? There was a little bit that happened here. In Counter-Strike, Kiyoshima is filling in with Cloud9 at the Blast Pro Series in Copenhagen. So I guess we'll see how this one goes.
The answer.
We'll see.
Yeah,
Cloud9's gone full European leftover, so... Every
definitely
time I tell,
not the answer for this situation.
Every time I'm like, man, I just wish they would stop going with these European leftovers. Oh, let's get another European leftover and throw it on the
table.
Stop it. What else do you have here?
Epicenter wrapped up this weekend. Good finals matchup. Actually, I'm sorry. It was Blast Pro Series, not Epicenter, right? No, it was Epicenter.
It was Epicenter.
Epicenter, yeah. Epicenter. I don't know why I said. I think I wrote Blast Pro in the notes.
Yeah,
what's confusing me? Yeah. So Epicenter was this weekend. You had Na'Vi and FaZe in the finals. There were a lot of top teams in this tournament. I mean, Liquid and all these guys were in there as well. FaZe topped Na'Vi, played really well. This is the best FaZe has looked. I mean, honestly, in the last 4 or 5 months, I feel they looked really strong in this tournament all the way through. Very dominant. They weren't dropping maps. They were doing kind of what we would have expected FaZe to be doing, but they finally turned up this time. Simple played amazing again. I think it was great to see Nico and Simple both at the same time playing at their top level. I think Simple led an overall rating. Nico won MVP, but. Yeah, they had some really good teams in Epicenter, so that was fun to see, and FaZe topped it there.
In other CSGO news, you had James Bardolph make his response video to Thorin's video that we talked about last week. It's not as spicy as everyone was hoping. I don't think it's the drama everyone was hoping, but to me, I think it was satisfying. You know, yeah, I wanted fists flying, right? I wanted to see Bardolph just be like, all right, Thorne, let me tell everyone all the
secrets about
you. Basically
just said
you.
Everything was a lie is what it came down to. It was a 5-minute video of him saying this was wrong, that was wrong, except for the Sponge thing, which we all kind of talked about briefly, but...
And maybe his thought process was, you know, I'm an owner of a company.
VP.
You know, I'm also a talent. Yeah, VP of a company. And is he VP?
Yeah, the VP of
marketing.
He's not
owner.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
He has a stake
in
Acer,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, maybe a business decision not to get in a war of words.
I don't think he has to, right? I don't think anyone has to get in a war of words with Thorne. I mean,
it's kind of a losing battle, right? Because Thorne's also not going to stop. So if Bardolph were to come out and go like balls deep on Thorne right there and really just hammer it home on him, Thorne would have had a rebuttal video that's about 4.5 hours long tomorrow. And so,
he's working on it right now.
It's
a 5-minute video.
It's kind of what I expected, but I was hoping for more, you know,
right.
Like I was hoping for it to be spicy.
It comes down to, there's probably truth in all of it, right?
Yeah.
What Thorne said, I'm sure it was blown up. I'm sure his source was probably a disgruntled caster who got paid lesser than what he thought he should, or maybe he thought he should be treated like a king and he wasn't, so he went to Thorne. And it's just like, you know, when I complain about my work to my wife, it makes it seem like I want to quit every day. But in reality, my job's not that bad, right? If you complain to your buddies, it sounds a lot worse. And then, so that's probably, you're probably hearing that side of the story from Thorne. And then Bardolph was like,
He gave, to give you like just a 20-second recap for those of you that were listening last week, he came out, the big points I think were Daps and Threat that Thorne made. Like, how the hell do you hire these two guys? With Daps, Bardolph's response was, hey, we thought it would be cool to have an active in-game leader, somebody that's currently playing against the top tier teams. You don't usually see that on the analyst desk. It's somebody that's retired or been out for a little bit of time, so they thought it would have brought a different perspective. Well, they were wrong. He sucked. Like, that should never happen again.
But that doesn't dispute that point, but like, that is a good
into it. Yeah. I get like what Bardolph was saying, and maybe that is the real reasoning. I do still think money played a part in that decision, because if you were willing to throw whatever money you could at someone, I still think you should have hired the best talent. But at least his answer gave a logical standpoint as to why they selected Daps. Threat, he basically just said he likes Threat. He thinks Threat's a great analyst. It has no ties to DDK and their working relationship. Again, okay, great. They like him as an analyst. Most people, however, found him to be quite dull or boring. So I don't think it makes the decisions they made right, but at least there's like a logical decision behind it. And then with Sponge, he did agree, saying like, hey, we should have had him in the earlier rounds and not brought him in a little bit later. Again, I think that was a no-brainer. Sponge is the best analyst we have on the scene right now. He should be involved in it as many aspects of your tournament as he can. And then the last rebuttal, I think the big one was, we ESL. Didn't hire people from ESL, and you know, they had Machine. He mentioned another name that I'm drawing a blank on right now, but he's like, look, we did hire some ESL employees. It's not like we were holding a grudge or
sticking the two of them. And I agree with that, because his point even too was like, why would not hiring ESL people like prove anything to ESL? Like, that's not hurting ESL any by not hiring them. So I do, after he said that out loud, I was like, oh yeah, I guess you're right. That doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
Like, why would you do that? But yeah, I think a lot of it was just a money factor and they cheaped out. That's why they made those decisions. Now, yes, that was probably the reasoning behind picking those people. But I think to get to Adapts and a Threat, it had to be like, okay, we're not willing to pay these top guys. What can we get for this budget? Okay, let's go this route because blah,
these
blah,
blah.
These
guys are good. So, it doesn't change the fact that the major was still pretty dull.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that doesn't change my thought process at all. I'm thinking it was by far one of the most boring majors from a jabber standpoint. Like, there just wasn't a lot of banter back and forth, and
yeah,
kind of just focused on the game.
Most boring.
Adria.
It was really just waiting for the games to start, right? Because in between and when there was delays, there was nothing exciting going on stream.
In League of Legends, we talked a little bit about it last week. Cloud9 was eliminated. Fnatic ended up sweeping them. And Invictus Gaming ended up sweeping G2.
Yeah, both were like really bad blowouts. Unfortunately, I did wake up for the G2 game and
I
watched a little bit of it. Once it got to 2-0, I went ahead and called it a night again. But yeah, I mean, both of those were complete blowouts.
So they play Fnatic and Invictus play each other Monday. Next Monday. In a week.
Is it Monday or Sunday morning?
I don't know, bro. I don't get these international
times. It might be like early Sunday morning our time.
Every website decides what time they want to use, and it's never consistent with the other one. It's like, hold up, this is like Swedish time, and then this one's like American time. I don't understand how people in Europe know what the hell is going on. But that's why they schedule everything on our holidays. In other news, Drake invests in 100 Thieves. And
along with Scooter Braun, so that's like huge. They're both part owners now.
And Michael Jordan is part of an investment group, including the Tampa Bay Lightning owner, in a $26 million investment with Team Liquid. So that's really just another way of saying big money is getting into esports. Curious to see what happens, considering we just saw Optic kind of take it in the shorts from blowing up, right? We just said it like three episodes ago that there was so much money coming into esports that all these projections were thrown out, and then it kind of slowed down, and then it's kind of like, ooh, like we're still growing, but dude, we cannot bounce
back. You have to be run more like a company now, right? So
like
companies like Optic and these guys, and you saw Envious kind of do the same thing last year, is getting the right people in place, not overspending where you don't have to, but the money is there. So for those of you that were worrying about looking at Optic, I mean, Fortnite just got a $1.25 billion investment from, I think, like four separate investor groups combined, four or five different investor groups. $1.25 billion.
I don't get it.
What do you mean?
That amount of money going into a game. As far as like an investment that, for a game that's...
Fortnite has shown one thing, and I think this could obviously be a segment on a whole episode, so maybe we won't dive in too much. We were all talking about what is Fortnite going to be in esports, right? They've shown it. Fortnite is taking a completely different path, and they're going to be a casual esports game. They're going to be a game that continuously makes changes to keep their world feeling alive, keeping it active. Their money comes from the casual audience, okay? It's not like Counter-Strike, where your skins, like $500 skins, are being bought by people that only play the game at a very high level. Yeah, there's a couple of random kids here and there that probably do it. But Fortnite's money is coming from the casual player. And so their goal is to appeal to the masses. And their money is going to go in that direction. They're going to host these huge tournaments where the payouts are insane. But they're going to be a casual esports game. And I think that's an interesting, unique, you know, segment to kind of capture that's not there right now.
Yeah, too bad the game sucks. Well, that does it for this episode.
And on that note,
if you're listening, Epic, I am still a fan. I'm still a fan.
Man, that will just about do it for this episode of The Center Ring, aka TCR, aka your favorite esports podcast. I thank you for bearing with this episode with my goofy sounding mic. I guess it's time to install all the drivers and reinstall them again on my computer for like the upteenth hundredth time. Thank you a lot, Windows Update. Appreciate ya. But we'll get the audio working next week. Where we'll talk about more esports stuff. Oh, we'll recap BlizzCon, of course, as we always do our full BlizzCon episode. So that will be next week. Follow us on Twitter @TheCenterRing for all your latest updates. Our Twitch, again, you can get that on our Twitter or our website, tcr.gg. We will be, or at least I'll be streaming on Wednesday. So come watch, have fun. I hate scary stuff, so I'm sure it will be at least a little bit entertaining for everyone. And I think that just about does it. So for Anuj, for Brett, I'm Tim. We'll see ya.